As we've been discussing in our ongoing India Now series, caste and the prejudices associated with it remain huge problems in the subcontinent. Now, this week, the Indian Supreme Court issued an order which would weaken or dilute a 1989 law designed to protect Dalits or untouchables. The court argued that the laws were being misused for settling vendettas. The court order brought tens of thousands from the Dalit communities out on the streets, and in some states, the protests turned violent. 9 people reported dead. So what happened and why? Joining me now is journalist and lawyer at the Madras High Court, Sureeth Pasarathy. And Sureeth, welcome back.
Yeah, my pleasure to be here.
Can you please explain to the listener about the law, the Scheduled Caste and Scheduled Tribe Act?
Right. So the Scheduled Castes and the Scheduled Tribes in India constitute amongst the sort of most who are extremely socially, educationally and economically backward, arising essentially out of the age-old practice of untouchability. And the 1989 legislation sought to correct some of these age-old practices of discrimination and try to alleviate the condition of the scheduled castes and the scheduled tribes. So this is a special piece of legislation which essentially incorporates a number of different stringent provisions that authorize the legal authorities, the police, to take action against people who commit one or the other of the offenses that are mentioned in the Act. And the Act enlists various different things and defines various different things as atrocities. Now, this would include, say, forcing a member of a scheduled caste or a scheduled tribe to eat or drink an inedible or an obnoxious substance, or forcibly remove the clothes of a scheduled caste or a scheduled tribe person, parading them naked, then essentially dispossess scheduled caste or scheduled tribe members from their land, or force or intimidate members of a scheduled caste or a scheduled tribe person from voting, and very many different things of this kind, instituting sort of false and vexatious litigation against members of the scheduled castes, or intentionally insulting or intimidating them in any manner within public view. So all of these things are categorized as offenses under this Act, and it's a special piece of legislation which allows the police to, on paper at least, take swift action against people who commit these offences.
Sureeth, how does it differ from the constitutional protection for Dalits introduced in Gandhi's time?
So the Constitution contains a charter on fundamental rights. And one of the unique provisions in this charter on fundamental rights is Article 17, which essentially abolishes untouchability and says that untouchability shall be an offence. But it doesn't prescribe any punishment for this, or it leaves that to the legislature to decide. And it is in furtherance of that vision that the 1989 law was introduced by Parliament and has continued in force for the last 20 years or 30 years or so. And the Constitution also contains a number of different other provisions which provides for affirmative action to Dalits. It allows for reservation in public employment, in education, and in many other different such spheres to members of scheduled castes and scheduled tribes and other backward classes as well. But this is distinct in that this is a special piece of legislation which is in many ways been brought in to kind of put that constitutional vision into force in order to give sort of practical effect to that vision and in order to bring about greater parity between the different classes. And I think it's far from working. It's been in force for 30 years. The number of convictions under the legislation are still very low.
And, well, if we could just look at that, I understand around 40,000 crimes against untouchables are reported every year. What's the conviction rate?
I think the conviction rate, I believe, is in the single digits, if I'm not mistaken. I need to check that up to be clear on it, but it's very, very low. And part of the reason why it's low is to do with the lack of teeth, perhaps, in the Act itself, but also it has something to do with the greater malaise of the Indian criminal justice system in terms of how it flows, which is why I think it comes as a bit of a surprise to see that the Supreme Court has diluted the provisions of this Act. And I think the court's order in many ways kind of rewrites the legislature's intention.
Sureeth, the court has argued that the Act has been misused and hence the low conviction rate. Let's look at the first point. What kind of misuse are they claiming? This is the vendetta argument.
Well, if you read the court's judgment, there's little evidence to show that there's been actual misuse. This is more rhetoric than actual sort of statistical evidence to show that the act is being misused. I don't think the low rates of conviction can be attributed merely to instances of an abuse of the law. And in that sense, the law is like any other law. I think almost all pieces of legislation are susceptible to abuse, and the SCST Prevention of Atrocities Act is no different. So I don't see why one or two stray incidents of misuse of this act needs to give rise to a judgment of this kind at all. And the order doesn't really provide for any evidence. It essentially goes on the rhetoric supplied by the various different counsel before it, and essentially takes their word for granted. And which is why the government has possibly faced with huge amounts of public pressure, now filed a petition seeking a review of this order, pointing out that this legislation can't be diluted in this manner, and that what the judiciary is doing here is effectively stepping into the shoes of the legislature, and that it is violating sort of the sacrosanct principles of separation of powers that the Constitution envisages.
Forgive a naive question, but given that India's now had two Dalits in the presidency, the incumbent is a Dalit, are there Dalits on the Supreme Court?
Not many. The judges, I don't think there's a single Dalit on the Supreme Court presently. There have been Dalits on the court previously. We've had a Dalit Chief Justice in the past. But presently, I don't think there's any Dalit representation. And even in the sort of high courts of the different states or in the lower judiciary, the proportion of Dalits is still remains very low. And this is one of the things that requires correction, because and this is very similar to the position of women on the Supreme Court bench. There's one woman presently on the Supreme Court. And when you don't have people from sort of oppressed classes on the court representing the interests of their own communities on the court, then I think that leads to judgments of this kind.
Some groups in India are also challenging the reservation system, which allocates untouchables a certain number of places at universities.
Right. This is something that's written into the Constitution, really, which is, again, unique to the Charter on the Fundamental Rights, because this goes to the question of what kind of vision the Constitution envisages. Does it, suppose a theory of a colorblind theory of equality, or does it look at, in terms of how some groups have historically been repressed and therefore require special attention? And the Constitution, I think, takes some sort of a middle course in that it provides for affirmative action to these communities. It specifically recognizes that scheduled castes and scheduled tribes and other backward classes are entitled to reservation, are entitled to a certain proportion of seats in public employment and in within the higher education system. And I don't think that this is something that can't be done away with simply through it requires a constitutional amendment, and there would obviously be a great amount of resistance to it, and rightly so, because there's no evidence that the place of Dalits in Indian society has improved sufficiently enough to do away with reservations. I think we have a long way to go before we reach that stage.
Suretha, this is a big media story in India.
Yeah, it's a huge media story, and I think that there have been. It wasn't a huge story before these protests, which is, I think, the pity, because the Supreme Court's decision didn't sort of lead to a large media outcry per se. But once there was protests on the streets, the media has woken up to it. And I think it was a pity that the media didn't really cover the case when it was being argued, because I think if there was a greater deal of attention being paid to the case when it was still before the court, when before the judgment was pronounced, it might have served the cause of the Dalits better.
Well, Suresh, the Dalits have got a good advocate in you. May I ask, what caste do you come from?
I don't belong to the Dalits. I belong to. I'm quite privileged in that sense, I think, and I hope that everyone recognizes their own privilege in India, and that's part of the problem. And The difficulty sometimes is that when we do come from privileged backgrounds, we don't recognize, or we tend to kind of overlook our own privilege, and this is possibly what leads to this kind of a kind of belief that these kind of legislation do not need to exist, because the ground realities present a completely different picture, one where caste is an intrinsic part of Indian life, where to do away with caste isn't as simplistic as, it's easy to claim that we should do away with caste, but it's so entrenched that it requires these kind of legislation. It requires these kind of special laws to fight it.
Sirith, as ever, a laser-sharp contribution. Sirith Parthasarathy is a journalist and a lawyer practicing in the Madras High Court.